Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
ABC plus THC equals RDDB. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'll play with acronyms for a while because I may as well play, checkers today. The news is really boring. I never say it, but I'm bored. I feel like I'm asleep, like I have allergies again. So Spitzer got off his high horse. He finally heard the people. He realized he might go to jail himself for spitting in the face of America. Not only New York, but all of America saw what an arrogant rich boy this kid was. Spitzer waves the white flag, dumps license plan for illegal immigrants. Hurrah, democracy rules. Well, I guess you could say it does. I mean, the people spoke, and even the billionaire's son heard the people. On the right side of my website, Chavez tells the Spanish king to apologize or risk business. I don't think he's too long for the world stage. Something tells me this dumb moron paratrooper from, I don't know where he's from the jungle, is not going to last too long because he's messing around with the wrong people. Let's put it to you that way. Here's a story that got me sick. I just read it 10 minutes ago. It really got me nauseous. Ex-Marine drill instructor guilty of abusing recruits. This is the first time in history under George Bush that the Marine Corps is eating its own. I've never seen anything like this. It's an autoimmune disease occurring inside the U.S. Marine Corps, and George Bush is the what do they call that? Munchausen by proxy syndrome. He's making the military sick. He's making them prosecute their own men. San Diego came out minutes ago. Former Marine drill instructor Sergeant Gerard Glass was convicted of a military jury of 8 counts related to the abuse of recruits. Jurors indicated, however, that they did not believe dozens of the allegations against them, in which there was no witness besides the recruit making the allegation. Sounds very much like the Haditha case. But that doesn't stop the commander-in-chief from shedding crocodile tears every time he goes to a cemetery. Both the verdict and the sentence will be reviewed by Brigadier General Angela Salinas. Angela Salinas, the commanding general of the recruit depot. You hear? This is the new Marine Corps. Angela is the new general. Glass stood ramrod straight as the sentence was read. His mother, Barbara, and father, Jerry, had tears in their eyes. Mother and son had embraced just before the verdict was read. Immediately afterward, Glass's father, a retired sheriff's deputy from Arizona, patted his son on the shoulder. Glass was an honor graduate of the drill instructor school. Convictions like this one are rare. In the last 3 years at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego, 44 drill instructors have been charged with misconduct of recruits. Of the 44, only 2 prior to Glass went to court-martial. The jury deliberated 8 hours over 2 days. Glass served as a Marine dog handler and had 2 tours in Iraq prior to becoming a drill instructor. During the trial, a dog handler who served with him testified that he followed the cardinal rule of dog handling, never hit a dog. Nevertheless, the new Marine recruits said that he was mean to them and that he hit them. He slapped them. He broke their hygiene kits. He faces 9.5 years in prison. This is the new Marine Corps under George Bush, the commander-in-chief. Ex-Marine drill instructor guilty of abusing recruits. Thank you. Thank you. Just what the doctor ordered in a time like this is the Marine Corps getting an autoimmune disease from the commander-in-chief. Kidney shortage inspires a radical idea. Doctor says sell the organs. You hear this? This is the new generation of doctors. I'm calling him Dr. Mengele Mattis. He's a kidney transplant surgeon. And with a big smile and a glasses and a beard, Dr. Arthur Mattis, I call him Mengele, wants the poor to have the right to sell their kidneys. He says it's a good thing that poor should be able to sell their kidneys. Dr. Arthur Mattis, 59 years old, is a Canadian-born physician, best known for his research at the University of Minnesota. Lately, he's been traveling the country trying to make the case that barring kidney sales is tantamount to sentencing some patients to death. You ever hear of turning everything around in itself? I never saw any. You know, this country is melting down faster than you can say Michael Savage. I've never seen anything like it. Everywhere I turn, I see a moral meltdown online. Forget sex, will you? This is what you call a moral meltdown. When you tell the poor, you put out an argument that it's for the benefit of the poor to be able to sell their kidneys to the rich. Are you kidding me? Dr. Mengele Mattis wants poor to sell their kidneys. This was on the front page of yesterday's Wall Street Journal. That's right. Dr. Mengele Mattis, in my opinion, I call him Mengele affectionately, wants the poor people to sell their kidneys. Most of you don't even know who Mengele is, which is unto itself a nightmare. But we'll let that go. It's not a quiz on who Mengele was. Kidney shortage inspires radical idea. Well, that's novel. That's really a radical idea, letting the poor sell their kidneys. Man, that's far out. That's very progressive. Think of all the yuppies in Marin County who would be able to get kidneys so they can go on wrecking the country, destroying America with their liberalism. Let's see it from the article. At the moment, there appears to be little, if any, political support so far for changing U.S. law. Still, Dr. Mengele Mattis and his growing rank of allies hope discourse, and research might eventually lead to a change in policy. Dr. Mattis says that it's a tough idea selling this, but it's a concept that takes a little while to sink in. When you first hear about it, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right, no, but after a while, you'll come to see that encouraging the poor to sell their kidneys is good. It's just good business. And some so-called medical ethicists are coming around. Now, I have never met or read a medical ethicist who didn't look like a Mengele to me. Most of them are the biggest slime bags in the history of medicine, but they become ethicists. The chief amongst them is this guy at Princeton who believes the handicap should be euthanized at birth. That's right. That's an ethicist today at Yale. That's what passes for an ethicist. So now there's another schmuck named Arthur Kaplan, noted bioethicist at the University of Pennsylvania, who said that he was concerned that poor people would sell under desperate and trying circumstances, and that wealthy types would find a way to get around a regulated market to get a kidney faster. But now the great ethicist Arthur Kaplan says, quote, "I've started to think that a trial at least is worth a look. Hey, Dr. Kaplan, I have an idea, Doc. Why don't you offer your kidney up for sale, Doc? You don't make a lot of money as an ethicist, do you? You could probably use a few shekels, a few bucks, whatever. Why don't you offer up your kidney, Kaplan? You moron, you putz. You're an ethicist. You're an ethicist like Mengele was an ethicist, in my opinion. This is what passes today for a medical ethicist. Play music for me, will you? I don't know. I just had a cappuccino. No, do I want to have an espresso? Play something for me, will you? Dig me out of this hole here. No, I'm not into that. I don't use those drugs. Don't play that for me. I just had an espresso out of my machine, and I didn't get scalded. I didn't get shot in the... Nothing happened. Nothing. With the Italian machine, I didn't have to call Vinny in New Jersey. I got a machine every other day. It's like a Ferrari, this thing. Every other day, I'm making a call to an 800 number. All right, what's the problem? And his guy answers, he's like out of The Sopranos. They must be the importer's nephew in between jobs. But at least he answers you. It's better than these robots or you get someone from India. And he always knows how to fix the thing. He said, pull out the bottom, take the two prongs. And he doesn't say, he says, take the two prongs and stick them in the sink and wash them and then wipe them down with a napkin. And it works after that. You got to hand it to this guy. I mean, they're importing something. You know, it's Italian. As you well know, Italians and machinery don't go together very well. Italians and technology. They make beautiful things that don't work. They make the most gorgeous things in the world, but they're not very reliable. They're like the Yugos of the car world. Every other day, something's wrong. I mean, the car burps. You step on the gas, and it gives a hiccup. The German cars are so boring, but they work better. You step on a thing like Zoom, 30 to 70 in 4 seconds. This big 600S, S600 Mercedes. I never saw anything like this car. A monster of a sedan, a four-door sedan. Boring looking. It's made to look boring. That's the thing about the Teutonics today. They're underplaying themselves, but they're still more, like they make the best machinery. It's like the super Panzer of the auto world. But it looks like a Rambler, like a 1960s Rambler, a meek grill. Then you got all the Chryslers out there with like dominant grills that they can't get out of their own way. They're like, you know, they're like feminist Chryslers with a four-cylinder type engine. Pow. 0 to 60 in 110 seconds is what it looks like to me. Why'd you call a Chrysler 300, which was named for one of the greatest cars of the late 50s, and call it a 300 and give like a dead engine in it? I'll never understand that. Why couldn't they put a hot engine in that car? Oh, it looks macho. I'm not yet here. I'm working on getting into this show. I'm not ready for it. I have a whole thing on Giuliani on immigration. Why do you hear this? Voters. I never saw anything like what's going on in the country today. Never. Never saw anything like it. A country with an autoimmune disease. It's turned on itself. Polls find voters in early states weighing issues versus electability. Duh. That's the headline in the New York Times? What are they talking about? I don't know anybody who's talking about the election. Nothing. Nobody but people in the media. Stepford author dies. Ira Levin, above whose other best-selling novels include Rosemary's Baby and The Boys from Brazil, were made in him was 78. He was a good writer. The Stepford Wife scared me to death. Wait a minute. He wrote Rosemary's Baby? The Boys from Brazil was a heck of a novel. It was about the Hitler with the clones of Hitler. Remember that? Oh, that dog. Where they say popcorn to the Weimar, those dogs, the German dogs, and they tear you to pieces. Or when you come in the house, the guy says popcorn, and the dog's, the muzzle's right next to your face growling. And then if he says something like, I don't know, Reichstag fire, the dog stops. What a movie that scared me. All that killing in it. What's this? Ex-publisher suit plays a Giuliani Carrick angle. Yeah, that was on the show yesterday. Judith Reagan, the former book publisher, says that she was dismissed by Murdoch of News Corp. And that she says that a senior executive at News Corp encouraged her to lie to federal investigators about her past affair with Bernard Carrick. And she claims it's something to do with Giuliani. You know, that part of it, I don't agree with at all. I think it's all hype. That's my intuition tells me it's rubbish. It's a little all over the map, this whole lawsuit. It looks like it was written by an amateur, by the way. The whole lawsuit looks amateurish. It's not by a major, it's not a major lawyer wrote this lawsuit. It's like a shyster lawyer somewhere wrote it up. It's got too much in it. The mark of a bad lawyer is when they throw the kitchen sink into the lawsuit. Everything they say, it doesn't mean. A good lawyer keeps it concise like a scientist. Now, what do you want to talk about? Look what I got callers now to deal with. I started the ball rolling. I looking up there, I could faint. I got to talk about the topics I just raised. And I have a trigger thumb at the same moment. The only good news today is that Spitzer was finally humbled for the first time in his Silver Spoon life. Born into a rich family in New York. Nothing wrong with that. But obviously the father babied him. The father and mother probably told him, a genius. I have a son so smart. My Elliot. You could puke for my Elliot. Look what he's done to this country from New York. They probably thought he had national ambitions. I can't use the word I would use because I'm on the radio. They tell me I'm on the radio. I wouldn't know. I'm sitting here in a bathrobe in a private studio somewhere. I wouldn't know whether I'm on the radio or not. This is why the show is popular. It is really you're looking inside the mind of an average intelligent man in America today. This is what I think. Forced to look at the news, I give back what I see. And many of you say, yes, yes, Mike, yes, that's what I think. Mike, yes, right on, Mike, yes. And that's why it's popular. I'm here in pajamas in a bathrobe in a private studio. I'm depressed, angry, agitated. And now already it says break. I just got warmed up. Already we got to go to the ads. But you know what? You better buy everything you listen to now because these are the good ones. Go ahead, play them. depends upon where you live in the country, what you see. Like, I live in Marin County, and there are some churches here, but they've all become like social network, like social networking places, like for Alcoholics Anonymous, Drugs Anonymous, you know, Sex Anonymous. And you go by these churches on a Tuesday night, you got these crowds of people in their 30s smoking outside. And I know they're hooking up. I mean, they're there to meet sex. If they're going to go to Sex Anonymous, it's because they're sex addicts. What do you think they're going there for? They're looking to meet somebody. Who do you think leads these things? They're all sick. Who do you think leads these? They're real sickos. You know, in the Bible Belt, you can go in a church, you really pray to God. Here you go in a church and you pray to Mammon. I don't know if there's maybe one or two real churches left in the whole Bay Area. I think one former church in San Francisco was converted into a gay porn studio with city money. Okay, what is Munchausen syndrome? The man wants to know. Well, we got very good callers. Let's go to the car one for a minute. There was something else on my mind. I'm a little slow today. You'll have to forgive me. I'm just slowed down here. I don't know what it is. You want me to give you like fake excitement about the news? There's nothing in the news. Zero. Well, I mean, ask me the question. I'll tell you the answer. My opinion anyway, okay? What topic is it that interests you that you'd like my outspoken opinion on? What would you like? Seaweed clothing has none test show. Oh, come on. They're selling shirts that they say has seaweed in it? Oh, God. Costly yoga and other workout clothes, which are made with unusual materials, including bamboo, silver, charcoal, coconut, and soybeans. Good God. Says it releases marine amino acids. Oh, what? You know, the liberal mind is really gullible. It's like Gullible's Travels here. Yoga is so popular, and most of the people in yoga are I'm sorry to tell you, they're former sexual, let's say promiscuous women, by and large, past the age where they can still get a mate. So they contort themselves on the floor hoping that the impulses will go away. Why do you think it's so popular? I mean, there's no other reason for it.
Savage.
We're talking about everything. Clinton now says no to licenses for illegals. So it took her like, well, the best comment on her flip-flopping came today from Obama. Obama's campaign, here it is. When it takes 2 weeks and six different positions to answer one question on immigration, it's easier to understand why the Clinton campaign would rather plant their questions than answer them. This is Barack Obama's spokesman, Bill Burton. That's pretty good. So finally, she has competition in Obama. I don't, you know, I would never vote for either of them, but I say go, baby, go. I hope he gets the nomination, because then America will have a clear choice between him and a liberal Republican. I don't know if there'll be much of a difference. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com website. This is the Savage Nation. Let's go to Radford, Virginia. Marcus, welcome. You're on the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. Yes, you need to call your local Chrysler dealer. Check out a Chrysler 300C. It's an SRT model. It has a 425 horsepower, 6.1 liter V8. It'll flat out blow the doors off of most Mercedes on the road.
Well, hold on, but it won't blow the door off all Mercedes, will it?
Oh, heck no. Mercedes makes a couple of cars that are well over $100,000. They have like V12 superchargers, yeah, and stuff.
I own an S600 that'll do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds. It's a V12. It weighs about 5,000 pounds. I've never had a car like this in my life.
Well, this SRT8 will do it.
Yeah, but wait. That SRT8 will do 0 to 60 in 6-point-something seconds. Yeah, we just checked it on the internet.
I'm not sure. Wait, this car's got, I mean, it'll do the quarter mile in under 13 seconds.
All right. No, I hear you, but it's not. I was saying something quite different, which is that the big Teutonic V12 in the S600 will do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds. Thank you for the call. I never saw a big car that would do anything like this. I don't like small cars at all. I don't like little cars. I don't like sports cars. My sports car days are over. And I got to tell you, I like big cars that are fast and nimble. I've always liked big cars that are fast and nimble, but I've never driven a big car that was fast and nimble like this in my life. Never. But there's a part of me that could just as happily drive a Volkswagen. I once had a green one that cost me $700. It means nothing to me at the end of the day. I don't live for any of this stuff. You see, that's the difference. Yeah, I enjoy this. Yes, I'll take it. But I don't need it. I don't need, that's the interesting thing I'm trying to tell you. Whatever. Whatever. Forget me in the car. I don't drive it anyway. I don't like going anywhere. Oh, did my day start out bad. I went to the barber. I let my hair grow too long because I don't like going to the barber. So I don't know how long I could push it. It's like older guys let their hair grow long thinking they look cool, but they don't. They look seedy. That's the thing about older guys with longer hair. They think it makes them look like they're back in the 60s or 70s, but they're not. It just makes them look seedy and cheap, particularly when the hair on the side of the neck isn't trimmed. It's terrible. It's grisly. But to make a long story short, I didn't care. I'm also like, yeah, I don't just care one way or the other. Because I'm a fairly decent-looking guy, and it doesn't really matter if my hair's longer by 2 inches or shorter. It's not like a corporate guy. You know, on radio, you can get away with it because you're in pajamas in a bathrobe in a private studio. Who looks at you but the dog? And since the dog always needs a haircut, he figures more hair is better. What does he care if your hair's an inch longer or shorter? He's not looking at you like, oh, you don't look like you worked for Ross Perot in the 1960s, or you don't look like you worked for IBM or for Nelson Rockefeller. I mean, whatever. So I figured, okay, I got to trim it. So I go to Supercuts. I'm down to like simple, fast haircut. I don't care who, clip, goodbye, right? $18, give him 25, goodbye, Charlie. As it is, it's too expensive. I go in there, I have nothing against the people. I've been in there a couple of times. They're Vietnamese that run this store. The guy is pretty good. He does a good job, period, end of story. So today I go in early, bingo, door opens, and there's two women cutting. And it went no long wait, you're 5 minute, okay, a 5 minute, boom, boom, boom. I see one of them giving a little dry cough, a little dry hacking cough. Now, I'm a little germophobic, which is why I'm still walking the earth. So I said, all right, let me watch this a little more carefully. Joe, a customer, gets up and leaves. She could have coughed in his nose. He would have said thank you. You know, Marin County, right? And an ethnic minority cutting your hair. She could spit in his face. He would probably say, ooh, thank you very much for the free fresher. So I sit down. She puts the cloak over me, and I hear the dry hacking. The little cough, they're the most dangerous. We're not talking an open subway, you know, phlegm cough. We're talking that dry cough. I said, are you sick? Heart? Made believe all of a sudden dummied up like she didn't speak English. Before that, she knew every word. I said, excuse me, if you're sick, tell me because I don't want to get sick. Immediately, she says, you want other girl? I said, okay, I'll take other girl. I take the cloak off. I wait 5 more minutes. I sit down. The next one, the next a dry out of there. So I didn't have my hair cut. Everything's going to pieces now. You know, you talk about being on an airplane and getting exposed. What about a barbershop? That's pretty intimate. What, because they're coughing in the back of your head? You don't think you're going to get a germ? Or on your ear, into the ear? Or you're touching? Or she's going to touch some with the scissor? What about the scissors in barbershops, how filthy they are? How do I know what hair she clipped with it? In the old days, the guys had like that weird like blue fluid that they put the scissors in. All of the standards of hygiene are gone in California. It's like going into a nail parlor. You know, they all look like they're hookers at night, and the husband wants to work them 24, like 22-7. So at night, she's on the streets. During the day, she's doing your nails and your toes. I wouldn't have my nails done in one of those places with those dirty bowls. Where'd that come from? That everyone needs their nails done in a filthy little nail bowl? Whatever happened to your old nail clipper? San Diego, Sophia, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi. Michael Savage, I wanted to ask you if you stereotype people who are into raw foods or yoga. I've heard some comments about that, and I'm just wondering.
Yes, I do. I do stereotype people who are. You mean you didn't hear the comment yourself, but somebody alerted you to get to call the show. You didn't hear it yourself.
And I just wondered if.
No. But let me, Sophie. You didn't actually hear what I said about yoga. Someone alerted you to what I said.
Hear your show, and I hear the comments about raw foods and yoga. What's interesting is I wanted to ask, do you know about the sect of the Jews, the Essenes, who were raw foodists?
Who what? Jews now were raw foodists?
You know, historically, you bring up a lot of the history of different...
Yes, you know, and all of the Essenes ate raw food?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because that's what
Now you're going to argue that the early Jews were into yoga?
No, the Essenes were
into they were the early Jews. You're saying that they were into yoga?
Raw foods, and I've heard some comments about.
Well, they never heard of yoga in ancient Palestine. Never heard of yoga.
Well,
the phonies from the east weren't here. You weren't there. They didn't make it over there yet. But let's talk about, how do you know they ate raw food? How can you confirm that?
But what I would like to know, wait.
You just made a statement. You already said, are you aware that the Essenes ate raw food? Is that not a comment you made, Sophia?
If you knew about it, because it was my understanding, but I'm not real sure.
How would anyone know what they ate? How is it possible to know? From the coprolites they left behind in a cave somewhere?
That's what I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Now my thumb is really starting to hurt me. I mean, coprolites are very interesting, but I don't want to go into what they are. 1-800-449-8255. Phone number, michaelsavage.com. Bakersfield, California, my favorite place on earth. Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
What's up?
I just had a question about the Munchausen syndrome. You said it was something about just like a subconscious to make you sick subconsciously?
Yeah. There's a syndrome called Munchausen by proxy. Largely mothers who continuously make their children sick and take them to the doctor. Munchausen by proxy.
Oh, okay. All right. Also,
that's
on the phone here, I just wanted to ask you your thoughts on the, I don't know if you heard Alec Baldwin's statements today about.
Who? What'd you get cut off? Someone cut him off? Did you guys cut him off?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you did cut him off? Why? Did not. He hung up. Okay, probably something went wrong down there, a little pulse from a UFO. Bakersfield, when you drive through, is like UFO land. It's like a long stretch of Highway 5 on the way to L.A. You, like, race through that area as fast as you can. It's eerie. It's like a moon landscape. I don't like going down Highway 5 to L.A. by car. I feel bad when I get near the stockyards. Like, millions of cows, you know, mooing, and they're going to be slaughtered, and little babies. And I don't know. I mean, I ate a burger once. But I don't like looking at the poor creatures that they just happen to be, you know, perfect for being culled. And it stinks. Eugh. Even if your air conditioning is on, you got a good 45 minutes to an hour you could puke in your own car, even with the air conditioning on a hot day. It's horrible. It's worse than the Kosciuszko Bridge with the Truns Meat Factory, which was the topper for bad smells on the earth. The worst smell on earth that I could remember in my olfactory brain memory is Truns Meats Pork Slaughterhouse, Brooklyn, Greenpoint, circa 1955 to 60, on a hot day coming over home from going with my father to work. You couldn't hear the pigs screaming, but man, could you smell that. There was nothing worse. You could puke, but I did tell you stories of One-Armed Frank who almost topped them. One-Armed Frank's breath almost topped the Truns Meat Factory on a hot day. Now, that's a sick breath. That's an illness when you have that kind of pyorrhea. Oh, God. You ride around in a car like that with a guy. You heard the One-Armed Frank story. I know you did, but I'm not going to go into it now. It's not funny. The guy's dead. May he rest in peace. I don't even know where he lost his arm. I never asked. It was sewn with the flap. He had the. In those days, they sewed. They didn't do prosthetic. The arm was gone. Boom. No one had money for an arm. They sewed the empty sleeve into the pocket, and that's it. The guy had one arm, and no one ridiculed him. He was known, by the way, as One-Armed Frank. It gave him an identity. No one said, hey, here's One-Armed Frank. They referred to him as One-Armed Frank as it was like Short Murray or Tall Bernie. You know what I'm saying? He was One-Armed Frank. No one laughed at him. So I'll tell the story in 1 minute or less. I'll do the 1 minute version of One-Armed Frank, because yesterday I told you Louie and the Monkey, which was one of my best stories of all time, for those of you tuning in every day. The Louie the Alcoholic Monkey story was one of my favorite. But now I'm going to tell you One-Armed Frank again in the context of the Bakersfield, you know, beef. And by the way, one of those beef farms is like organic beef. They still scream when they're killed, the cows. What do you think? They jump into the hopper? Oh, hi, I'm organic. Oh, you know, I'm an organic cow. I can't wait to die. They still line up there and they don't want to die. It's a sentient creature. You think they want to die? They're not liberals. They don't want to die. They don't want to like jump over so fast. You ever been in a slaughterhouse? One of the worst places on earth. Go try it someday. I went in once in Fiji. My heart broke. They shoot the animal in the head. Oh, what a horrible thing. And the cow knows it's going to die, I got to tell you. They don't want to go, and they poke him in the anus with a broomstick to make it move down the chute. It's awful. It's horrible. It makes you never want to eat meat again. Never. Ugh. They stick it in the behind with it because the cow stops. He hears his friends screaming and dying in cow talk, and he's next. And I ain't going down. Yes, you are. I'm not. Yes, you are. And they stick the broomstick, boom, and he goes in, and they shoot him in the head, and he's dead. Ugh. Then they cut him up. Nice conversation to have, isn't it? A talk show, you expect me to say Republicans are the best thing in the world, Democrats, they're evil. Why, if those Republicans win, the world will be safe for democracy. And if those Democrats win, why, we're going down the tubes. Oh, Lord God in heaven. I'd rather read the thesaurus than do the news today. I'd rather get out the thesaurus and start with the S's than do what I have to do today for a living. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me what I have to do? They're doing a debate in Vegas tomorrow night? How boring. What a way to ruin Las Vegas is to bring the Democrats to argue in Las Vegas. You think most of the people there want to hear Hillary and Obama and Edwards argue over politics? They're there to gamble like the morons they are and party. That's all. What do you think they go there for? To be taken like the suckers they are. They're going there to be beaten up. I love they call it gaming. Don't you love what they call gambling gaming, to give it a new name? I wonder what they're going to call, like, drug users, injection drug users, instead of junkie. Everything has a new name. A junkie's now an injection drug user. A gambling addict is a gaming aficionado. And I guess somebody who sells his own kidney, we'd have to come up with some kind of pleasant phrase for that. Let's say an optional organ donor. No, donor isn't right. Well, yes, optional organ donor would be some poor person who has to sell their kidney. Terrible scene in the barbershop. Meanwhile, I need a haircut. I may never leave the house again. Then I went into a fake art store that sells oil paintings, as original oil paintings. I asked the guy, are they made by machine? He threw me out of the store. He threatened to call the police. I said, hey, do what you want to do. I'm going to report you to the you won't answer that question. You're persona non grata in my art store, he says to me. I said, I asked you one question. You say they're original oil paintings. I'm asking you, are they original or are they machine made? Get out of my store. You hear? Well, that was the answer, I suppose. Then let's see what else happened today. Oh, I saw something good. Let me give you the good news. Then I'm going to take a break again, which is good. It shows how many people are lining up to advertise in the show. Don't get there. Only one cowardly group. One cowardly advertiser, which when I put on my website, you'll have a choice to drop them. And believe me, I think tens of thousands of you bought their product, and then they want to take the side of the radical Islamists. Go ahead. You'll show them whether they're more of them or you. But I'm not ready for it yet. We're giving them a chance, one chance to come back. Then I'm putting the name all over my website. What was the good news? Oh, so I'm in the mall. Becoming like a mall guy. How boring. God. It's like a mall person. I don't even like mall. I have to go there because, well, it's an outdoor mall. It's not indoor. And I see a small spectrum of life, at least better than sitting in the house, seeing nothing. I saw a Mexican guy with his kid. And normally I wouldn't, you know, watch anything too carefully, but he was a delivery guy. He had a cowboy hat on because he was more of the rural type. It's like just off the boat kind, from deeper in like Chiapas area. And they look different. They act. So he has the cowboy, and he has a son, maybe 8 years old, and I see he's with his daddy while the daddy's delivering stuff out of the truck, and I reminded me and my father. And I see the father loves his son, like heartbreaking love, which I never see in a white man. Never. I told you this before when I saw a Mexican family with their daughter dressed up in a nice dress on Sunday. I said, that's the future of America, and how he loved his daughter and kissed her in the restaurant. Remember I told you that story in KFC? And I said, this is the hope for America. So anyway, this guy's with his 9-year-old son, and he's got one of those push things that you move things around, and I forget what they call, like a dolly, that you roll a roller to move the heavy stuff. And when he came back from the store with the delivery, he was pushing his son on it with a huge smile on his face. He loved his boy. And I said, man, I never see that in this country anymore, where a father takes his son to work and loves him like that. God bless that Mexican man, I said to myself. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We invited Rudy Giuliani on the show. So instead, we looked him up on immigration. And he says he would allow immigrants to work with tamper-proof ID cards. He would let illegal kids go to school or they'll be on the streets. He supports a Senate guest worker plan and a path to citizenship. He believes that his sanctuary policy helped make New York City less criminal. Oh, yeah. I wonder why he won't come on the show. But he goes on Wallbanger's show. And everyone on Fox has him on because they won't ask him these questions. I like Fox News. Don't get me wrong. 90%, but they're basically working for a certain agenda. You know, they're not that independent. I don't think, not my opinion anyway. Las Vegas, George on K-Dawn. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. Hey, I just want to let you know I'm very extremely conservative, and I love yoga. The girls in there are tens, I would say. And
no, really well, you answered your own question. First of all, you're in Las Vegas, right?
Right, that's right.
And most of the girls that were in there probably are sex workers after work. That would be my guess.
Yeah, that might be a possibility.
All right, so no wonder you love yoga. Sure. I remember in the 80s, everyone liked the gym all of a sudden. Flabby guys were rushing to the gym, to the exercise classes. You think they really wanted to stress and strain? They were there to gape.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Here they, I guess.
All right, it's your business, a free country. I don't care. And in those days, it was spandex, you know, and exercise and puffing and huffing. Now it's contortion. Yoga's a cult. If you actually study it, it's some kind of an Eastern cult that makes you bow down to the instructor. It's a cultish thing. I don't like bowing down to anybody, and it's a submissive exercise. If you're into submissiveness, okay, or promiscuousness, I would say it's for you. And if you're a submissive, promiscuous person, you're in real business. And if you want to combine the two words, you can come up with another one.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.
It is the Savage Nation. One more refrain, whatever.
Beyond the sea, she's there watching for me.
All right, thank you very much. I give him a coin and we'll see him in the next world. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. A Regency brass-mounted rosewood breakfast table, first quarter 19th century, estimate $4,000 to $6,000. Item 3, an Italian aesthetic walnut inlaid center table, fourth quarter 19th century, estimate $3,000 to $4,000. Oh, pardon me, I'm reading an auction catalog that came in the mail. Some of the items are beautiful, but they always undervalue them, so you go in there like... Number 7, an Italian patinated bronze figure of the Galata Morenti. What is the Galata Morenti? Does anyone know? Late 19th century? Estimate $4,000 to $6,000. Bronze. Bronze never took off. Bronze statues. They're way under. I always like bronze, patinated bronze, and I love white marble known as alabaster. I have just like two white marble pieces, one of Dante's head and one of a girl from God knows where, beautiful face, looks up. I have her at the bottom of the staircase. And, you know, just the little things that make life interesting. Anyway, what I'm musing on all of this. Oh, this is the Los Angeles auction of Bonham and Butterfields. It was much better when it was local. Since the big company took it over, I don't go to any more of those auctions. Everything, when it gets bigger, it becomes different. It's not as good as locally owned. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. What do you want to talk about? My thumb, blue fluid in the barbershop, Hillary Clinton backing up on the illegal immigrants, Ted Kennedy being the best expert on waterboarding. He would be the most expert on the issue of waterboarding in Congress when you think about it. He knows more about water and about boarding. Well, mounting anyway. And they don't call it water mounting. They call it waterboarding. So maybe I'm wrong on that. And then the drill sergeant getting drilled today. We're waiting to see what his punishment will be. He's found guilty under Commander Bush. What they're going to give him, I don't know. Did that come down yet, Beowulf? It's going on right now as you talk at Camp Pendleton. They're going to tell you what the drill sergeant's going to get. Can you believe this? How can the military do this to itself? I'm not in the military, but I'm worried about a country that destroys its own military, that eats it alive like this. And the rest of the country's interested in, like, that the TV writers are on strike. That's their biggest deal, you know? Thank God. Well, they're all dropping like flies. All of the old Reds are dying off, like the naked and the dead. The naked Red is dead. I'm not saying thank God, but I'm glad they're going, that generation. It's about time they got off the world stage. It's enough already with them. They were stinkers. They really were. Why they hated America, I'll never know. Most of their grandparents came here and kissed the ground. They spit on the ground of America. How does that happen? The grandparent comes here and kisses the ground, and then two generations later, they're spitting on the ground. How does that happen? Like Norman Mailer. Why did he hate America so much? What was wrong with him? Probably the marijuana would be my guess, the drugs. I think it screws people's minds up permanently. And the remember yesterday we talked about the altered eye alters all. Remember that? Remember that lesson on the show yesterday from Blake? Oh, forget it. What do you think I'm talking about here to myself? I don't know. What are we talking about? John, Pennsylvania, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just called to thank you for all the information that you give us, but not only for the information, but the vocabulary you use when you talk to us is so enriching, and at times I have to go home and pull out the dictionary to look up certain words that you use. My wife just bought me The Enemy Within, and I just started to read it last night. I got home late from work, and I'm just anxious to get home now. I'm on the road. I'm anxious to get home and get back into it, but I just wanted to thank you. I love listening to your show whenever.
Well, thank you very much. I try not to use words to sound impressive. If they fit, and there's a better word that's simpler, I will use it. But if there's a better word that's not simple, I have to use it. You follow what I mean? There are people in the media who will use a big word now and again to sound intelligent. But my rule is if there's a simpler word that works, use the simpler word. Wow. Thank you for the call and thank you for the compliments. I learned that a long time ago. Usually the least educated people in the media use the most complex words. It's like the assistant professor. Remember I told this story about my favorite teacher was a full professor at Queens College because he was way above everybody, but he was so direct to the students and nothing was complicated. Everything was easy. It was like sitting on the edge of a seesaw. You were the student on one side of the seesaw. He was on the other side and it went up and down and you learned. He didn't care about breaking you behind, you know, killing you with tough, take it up. And the assistant professor or the grad student, the TA would come in. And the board would be filled with formulae and the words, and you'll be tested tomorrow. That's because he was unsure of himself. The surest mark of someone who's unsure of himself is to make it too complicated. Don't assume that if somebody speaks to you plainly that they're stupid and they don't know the big words. Now, if the big word fits, use it. But if a simpler word fits, use it better or something. 1-800-449-8255. Franco in Los Angeles on my Los Angeles station, 8:30 on the dial. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hey, Mr. Savage, earlier you said that the Italians aren't good at making mechanical things. Since you're a yacht owner, you should know that the Italians make the best yachts.
What do they make?
The Ferretti Group, which makes Persian.
Yes, they do make gorgeous boats. Absolutely design-wise. However, let's discuss it without getting mad. You need to have like a mechanic with you to drive one.
Well, they got the new Volvo Penta, like cruise control.
Oh, well, that's the killer. That's the number one engine in the world. The engine drivetrain on that, nobody can beat that engine. In fact, the only reason I would trade in my boat is for the Volvo Penta system, which is a 360-degree rotating prop, right?
Yeah, you pretty much tell it where to do, and it does it like that.
I never saw anything like it. You don't even need a bow thruster with the new Volvo system. It's unbelievable. But I got to admit, all of the Italian yachts are the most beautiful on the water. Gorgeous. They're magnificent, every one of them. But they're finicky. They're very finicky. They're very demanding, Franco.
The thing you said about the Yugo, the Yugo was actually a Fiat made in Yugoslavia. Did you know?
Well, and that was before they had the troubles in Yugoslavia. You know, they couldn't get along on the political realm. You can imagine what they did in the factory there, all the different ethnic groups. That's why the Yugo was a mess. Thanks for the call. I didn't say Italian cars are bad. I said they're finicky. They're difficult. The German cars are not as good looking, but they're better. Everyone knows that. How could you beat German engineering? It's impossible, particularly in the upper end now. Mercedes is making a lot of the poor little cars here, and they're not really Mercedes in that sense, you know. Forget about it. What do you want to talk about, cars and boats? I can do that too. Planes, trains, cars, boats, all aboard. Well, you want to talk about your favorite private jet? You want to do that one? Let's do that one. Hands down, number one, Gulfstream. What's next? Well, what's number two? What's number two in the private jet world? It's got to be the Cessna Citation, the Citation II. It's a great plane for under 1,500 miles. You want to go over 1,500 miles? You got to go to the Gulfstream, G3, G4, G5. Great planes. Comfortable, big windows, 60,000 feet. What's wrong with that? Nothing. You avoid tuberculosis. You can have your own food put on it. If you don't go anywhere, you're better off. You had a nightmare. That's right. That's why I'm not feeling good. Thank God I have a radio show to work it all out with. I remember psychotherapy for me. I should be paying you for listening to this show. It took me this long now, 75 minutes of radio, to get to what's bothering me. It wasn't that the haircut, that the two barbers had a dry cough, the Vietnamese girl. And I walked out because I was afraid I was going to get like a dry cough, a TB job with a little clip. And I'd have a cough for 6 years. All from that. No, it wasn't that. I had this repetitive nightmare again. It's going on for 20 years now. Again, the same dream over and over again. I know when it happened, too. Airport, crowd, airplane. On the plane, didn't make the reservation, no seats. Better call. We're leaving tomorrow. We're going back from London to America. You got to call or you won't get on the plane. We got to get on the plane. We got to get the seats. You walk on the plane. It's like a movie theater instead of a plane. And the seats I want are not there anyway. And I have to stand the whole time. It's like one of those dreams. It's like flying anxiety in commercial airplanes. It's all to do with seating, proper seating in a commercial jet. Horrible. Horrible. It goes back to the barber in the Bronx who had the King Tut thing in the did I tell you that story with the you looked in the mirror? I hated haircuts as a kid. Hated them. I hated when they pushed your head down and the sound in the zzzz. It made me very sensitive to control and sound. I didn't like a man holding my head and pushing it down for obvious reasons. Okay, I'm not saying he was a molester. Don't get me wrong. My mother was always watching like a hawk to make sure. No, I didn't say there was anything hanging, but they held your head and pushed it. And they almost broke your neck. They were sadistic a little bit, too. And the hand stank of, like, nicotine. It was like a wiry hand with a lot of hair. But the worst part was not that they pushed your head down and the zzz in the ear. That was not the worst part. The worst part, hey, Michael, get in the chair. Look, it's a king. They had a King Tut, like a little coffin, to top it off. You hear what they did to me? It was a coffin, a little teeny coffin with a magnetic King Tut that went in it. That was supposed to make me want to have my head bent down and have a zzz in the ear. Oh, hey, yeah, I'm a schmuck. Hey, you're great. Get out the clowns. Sure, I love looking at that. Yay, now you can push my head down. Great. I would fight with them. They'd have to hold me in the chair. I hated it. I hate it. Well, it reminded me of Dr. Konap again. May he rest in hell. With the ear cleaning, that was another thing. Do you know how they abused children in those days in doctors' offices? It was medieval. Oh, those doctors in those days. I don't know if they're worse today. They take your kidney out and don't even tell you. You went into this guy's office. Again, they set you up. He's just going to look at you. He's not going to do anything. Right away, you knew you were in for it. It was like you were like a cow, as I told you earlier, going down the ramp for slaughter. The minute they said, don't worry, he's not going to hurt you, you knew you were in for it. You were really going to get cleaned out there. No, I'm not going. So they grabbed you then. And the next thing you knew, your head was slammed down against some exam. I hated that paper on the examination table. That was so awful, putting your head on it. And I remember looking like an animal about to be killed. They had a little pan next to my ear. I can remember to this day, like a weird medical pan. It was like a Mengele pan. It was horrible. And it was like your eye could see it, the side of your eye. You could see this porcelain pan that you knew was for bodily fluids. Even though you were like a kid, you knew it was no good coming. And your head would be down. You're like writhing and yelling and trying to punch your mother and punch the doctor. Hold the kid down. Hold it. And they put a tube in my ear. God, that rat. And they drained my ear. It was disgusting what came out. It looked like afterbirth. Pardon me. I mean, it was horrible. What they were doing to me there. That's how doctoring was done in those days. That son of a gun. That son of a gun, what he did to this family, that doctor, that rat. He wasn't the worst. There were worse than him yet. Then I had a nice pharmacist guy, an Italian guy. I loved him. God rest his soul. He was a good man. He hired me when I was underage, 14, to work in the pharmacy. Doc, I loved him. He had one short foot with a big shoe. Don't know what it was from. Congenital? Falling off a train, as they say, as a youth, I doubted. They always made up. In those days, they hid birth anomalies. They always had, like, an excuse. Like, how did Chesty, why did he look like that with a big head? A piano hit him on the head, they would tell me. I knew that was, even as a five-year-old, it didn't make sense. He had a disease, you know, from the adrenal glands, the other one. And they would say, well, why does Chesty look like that, Mom? A piano hit him on the head. They would say, what? What? It fell out of a building. The things they would say to you, you knew it was illogical. If a guy got hit by a piano, even at five, you knew it would kill him. I knew that as a five-year-old. They couldn't fool me. I stretched my... How could they... A piano hit him on the head, and he's walking around. That made his head look so big. Nah, the poor guy had an adrenal thing. And so it was the same with the doctor. I mean, I don't think that it was falling off a train as a youth. I think born that way, but a lovely man. Every day brought veal parmesan, again in the porcelain container, from the wife. In Queens, ate like a king in there. And he let me be the pharmacist at 14. I suddenly became the pharmacist. No training, and I was the pharmacist. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What makes Michael run? Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Sambucus, pulverized glycerin. I have a small collection of glass pharmaceutical jars from the pharmacy days of America. It's gorgeous. Indianapolis, Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, Dr. Savage, I actually wanted to ask you to expound on earlier you were talking about being a pharmacy or technician, I guess, these days. But back then, you were saying that you were actually...
Yeah, they didn't call me a technician. The guy let me just make prescriptions while he ate the veal parmesan because he was Italian and wanted to enjoy his lunch. But it was illegal. I mean, I was a kid. I wasn't trained, but I never made a mistake. No one ever got sick, so far as I know.
So it didn't end up like It's a Wonderful Life type thing where the pharmacist... You know, gave a wrong medication out.
I don't know. Maybe half of Queens was, I don't know. Look, what's pharmacy? 6 pills of this or 12 pills of that. I could do, if the pharmacist wrote penicillin, 400 milligram, I went to penicillin, there was 100, 200, 400. I was a smart kid. I never made a mistake. And then, of course, I actually ground up things for him. How hard is it? If you're a smart kid at 14, children are very smart at 14. By and large, some are. Not everyone's a drugged-up maniac, you know, especially in that generation. He wanted lunch for the hour. So if a complex prescription came in with a gram of this powder and 500 milligrams of that powder, I ground it up sometimes and put it in there. As far as I know, no, everyone was happy, except the New York City health inspector came in, and that was it, boom. I told you the story. He came and looked over the counter, and they were weaselly kind of guys. He said, hi, how are you? I said, hello. He said, I see what you're doing, making a little prescription, yes. Went up to Doc, and he said, I got bad news for you. Here's my badge. Doc, the face turned white. Oh, horrible.
Savage.
the Savage Nation. Any topic is fair game. 1-800-449. The big news is that Spitzer finally saw the light of day and realized he's not a king, and that the people were really fuming. He probably was going to be in. He was destroying the Democrat Party. Look what he did to Hillary Clinton. He became the fulcrum of, well, the fulcrum year upon which Hillary's future was balanced, and she became imbalanced. Let me put it to you that way. All over the issue that I've been making an issue of since 1994, which everyone tried to avoid until relatively recently. You know, I want to talk about the illegal immigration issue for a few minutes. I told you that I have a lot of dealings with folks from south of the border. And the ones I deal with are the nicest, hardest working people on earth. I've said that to you. I've told you about my views of how they deal with their families. And I'm also very cognizant of the fact that 30% of all prisoners are illegal aliens, and they're really bad people. They're bad. But there's a huge disparity between the two sides in this issue. Huge disparity. And there has to be a solution. And one of the solutions that's not been talked about much, and since I'm one of the pioneers in this whole issue of illegal immigration in the media, I should be the one to tell you that I have a partial solution. And I one of them I published in Liberalism as a Mental Disorder, and I thought it was a very fair solution, which was that the government of Mexico, which is greatly benefiting from exporting its poorest citizens, who are sending back $15 to $30 billion a year in hard currency, should be forced, asked if you want, forced to give us one barrel of oil per day for every illegal alien. So let's say 20 million barrels a day. They are swimming in the third or fourth largest oil reserve in the world. Most of it has not even been exploited yet. That would be one possible balancing act. And we could sure use the oil. It doesn't have to be shipped from the Persian Gulf. It could be transported overland by a pipeline. How come no one ever talks about it? I had it in my book for two, 3 years now. A barrel of oil for every illegal alien from Mexico. It would balance out the costs. And it would go a long way towards assuaging the concern and the anger towards the illegal alien. And then there's another element to the illegal alien problem. I personally have no problem with those who come here and work. I really don't. You can say, and I've said that you can make the illegal, you can make the welfare bum work. Yeah, good luck with this, with the socialist welfare government we have, making anyone do anything except the hardworking conservative, ripping him off for taxes at over 50% of what he earns, state, local, federal, you name it, FICA. But there's another way around this, and I've said it. Why must it be all or nothing with this country? You have illegal aliens, so the Democrats and the Bush faction of the Republican Party say, make them all legal. It's not going to happen. The people have spoken, and they see the handwriting on the wall. They know what's happened. The Republican Party is broken because of Bush and is pandering to the illegal alien. Can't they say, we recognize that the people are offended by the social costs, so here's what we suggest. We will legalize those who have jobs, but they're not qualified for any welfare or any benefits for 15 years. They cannot go on the dole. If they get sick, they got to leave the country. We're not going to care for them. They go to a hospital, they're going to have to pay for their own costs because they haven't put anything into the system. Now, it's a partial compromise, isn't it? Why can't it be a compromise somewhere? Why must everything be either or? Legalize them all or kick them all out of the country. Why must everything be like that? That makes no sense. It's not rational. I'm an observer of real life, so when I told you, when I saw that Mexican man with the cowboy hat today and how he loved his son pushing the boy on a dolly. And the guy was no ha-ha like lightweight guy. He was a rough-looking hombre. You know, I can tell a difference between men looking at him. And he was a tough guy. He loved his 8-year-old boy. Loved him. The way he pushed him around on that, I don't know what you call it, like a dolly thing with the two wheels that you hold the handles. I can't, there's a special name. It's not a dolly exactly. How could he go from being a laborer to playing with his son on the same thing, unless he was a better human being than most of the men I see walking around in this country who are like just not there with their children, you know? Anyway, forget about it. So I've given you some new ideas to think about. 1-800-449-8255. Pulverized glycerinum. Sambucus. Reno, Nevada. Robin, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to let you know, I heard you this morning. I am one of those people that was treated by Dr. Cathcart when I was a kid. And at the time...
Yeah, he's my friend who passed away about 3 weeks ago, and I asked to eulogize him. I asked for people who have been treated by that wonderful doctor.
And he was, and it was. It's funny because Incline's kind of a financially upper crust type of town, and at the time when I was treated, there was maybe 4,000 people that lived there, and a great many of them felt that Dr. Cathcart was a, what's the word, not a real doctor because some of his, you know, treatments weren't the norm. And I just want to say it made a huge difference.
Well, he was
life.
An orthopedic surgeon trained at one of the best medical schools. He invented the Cathcart ellipsoid prosthesis. He was the top of the line, but he also saw the wonders of vitamin C and other nutrients. Of course they wouldn't like him because he wasn't towing the party line of drugs, of burn, cut, and poison. He was a pioneer.
Exactly.
Thank you for the call. That's all. Portland, Oregon, KXL. Scott, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I was just wondering at what point, you said earlier in the program that you worked for a pharmacy. I work for a drug company, and I'm wondering at what point it seems like you almost hate these drug companies, or do you? Or where?
I don't hate the drug companies. I love Western medicine. However, I think that drugs are too easily prescribed as a cure-all when they're not. I think that there are many side effects that need to be thought about. I think drug interactions are very, very problematic, particularly multiple drugs that are being prescribed, 6-7 pharmaceuticals at once for so many people, and no one studied the interactions. My big problem is with pediatricians overprescribing Ritalin for a disease that doesn't exist called ADHD. They make up diseases so they can tie it to a pharmaceutical. That's my real problem with it.
Well, it's actually, there's another term for ADHD or ADD, and it's BNS. Are you familiar with this?
Well, don't come up with I'm familiar with it. ADD is an invention of the drug industry, and it's a very, very cynical invention. One study after another by legitimate scientists are proving beyond a reasonable doubt that not only is ADHD a created entity, but that the drugs used to treat children like Ritalin harms children, creates criminals, makes them into drug addicts. I'm not making this up. It's coming out day after day, mainly out of Britain, not out of America, where the pharmaceutical industry has a complete lock grip on the research industry. Thank you for the call. Read my book. Read my lips. Don't use Ritalin. Healing Children Naturally. Special fall sale. Only 369 remain. Yep, that's it. Musharraf expected to step down as Pakistan Army Chief. That's great that the girl, the woman there, the poor, a downtrodden woman, Bhutto, what a bunch of gullible morons the American media is made up of. Bhutto's a woman, and therefore she's a victim? God in heaven, this is horrible. It's really horrible. No wonder I'm depressed. The idiots in the media are really getting me sick. Everything they got backwards. Everything. Musharraf is the best friend we could ever have in Pakistan. And what do they want? Bhutto, the corrupt former leader, to get a democracy going in a land where they're going to vote in Osama bin Laden as the president of the country if they're allowed to do so? Are you people out of your minds? Hitler was elected democratically, and that really brought about a great Germany, didn't it? San Diego, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, what year do you consider is the worst year in our history?
Whoa, wow. You're talking about going back to 1776?
No, sir, relevant to the current problems.
Well, I mean, but how far back would you give me a time frame?
20th century.
20th century? Worst year in U.S. history. U.S. history or world history?
Ours, U.S.
Oh, that's a tough one. 20th century, worst year. I'd have to think about it. I don't want to sound glib. I don't know. What's your worst year? I mean, in U.S. history, what would you elect?
1913.
Oh, you're going to say the Federal Reserve going off, creating the Federal Reserve Bank?
And two other things.
All right, what are they?
Income taxes, and they took away the governors from selecting our senators.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. The income tax thing is very, very problematic, particularly what they call a progressive income tax, which is outright socialism. How can you tax a man who makes more money at a higher rate than a man who makes less money? Isn't that communism?
Oh, yeah.
Why should it not be one tax rate for everyone? You mean you're punished for being smarter or luckier? What kind of government is this? Thanks for the call. I can all know. I actually think 1913 was a great year. That was the year my father was born, God rest his soul. So I actually like that year. I could never agree with the guy on that, you know. But that's neither here nor there. Sacramento, AJ. AJ in Sacramento. What's on your mind, sir?
Savage. Hey, Michael, I'm telling you something. You are right on. I became a citizen of this fine country in March of this year. I left Canada 18 years ago. I finally became a citizen. Do you know why?
No.
Four reasons. Number one, the socialism. Number two, the high taxes. Number three, the cold weather. Number four, the mosquitoes.
I'll tell you the truth. On number one and two, we're almost there already here on high taxes and socialism. We're not too far away from the country you left behind, are we?
You got it. My mom is 81 years old. She's been waiting 4 months to get an MRI. And I told her, Mama, why don't you just come down here, you know? It's going to cost you maybe $200-$300. No, I'm not going to pay for it. If I can get it for free.
Well, the better way to get an immediate MRI is to change your name and go to Mexico on a one-way ticket and then swim across the Rio Grande or wade across it. Immediate MRI. You go to the head of the list, you get gold-plated medical system. Interest immediately. 1-800-449-8255. There is news. One is I walked out of a barbershop today because the women had a dry cough. That was, you know what? Why I'm talking about that over and over again. A, it's a little funny, but there's another reason. You should have seen the other people in there look at me when I got up and left like I did something wrong for using common sense. The sheep-like behavior of most American men is disgusting. They don't even have the brains to get up if a barber's coughing on their neck when they sit down with a dry cough. Why are you going to sit there for? What good could come of that haircut? You don't have the brains to get up if someone's coughing on you? Well, no, you might insult an ethnic minority. Barber who's just, after all, struggling to make a living. And I'm the mean guy for getting up from the barber chair and leaving. I didn't say anything. I just got up and left. I said, you have a cold. And she didn't answer me. She took the cloak off. That was it. But go ahead, sit there and get a little cough in the ear. See if I care. We got a bunch of great callers here. Whatever you want to talk about. Thumbs, UFOs. Let me take a UFO call. This is a kick. Chris, KNEW, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, big fan. I got a hypothetical situation. Let's imagine two rational men who sit down. One of them is a devoutly religious man. He believes in heaven and hell and angels and the devil. And then another guy is a firm believer in UFOs. Maybe he even believes he has seen a UFO. How come everybody would ridicule the UFO believer when, if you were to strip away the religious aspects, both guys are kind of believing in other realms of existence and alternate dimensions?
You know, you make a good point, but let me explain something to you. You're giving an either-or again, Chris. Not all religious people believe in angels and such, nor in an afterlife. Not all religious people believe that, nor do all sects of religion teach that. I don't know if you know that.
Yes.
There's a great division within religious groups as to whether there's that afterlife and whether there are angels and whether there is a judgment day and whether there's an afterlife. Not everyone believes in that, yet some are religious people anyway. So, again, you can't overgeneralize. And with regard to UFOs, I would suppose there's a whole spectrum of people on that too. I don't think that there's one monolithic belief on UFOs, is there?
No, there isn't.
Well, what do you believe? Tell me what you believe.
You know, I think that the universe is just too great and too grand for us to really think that we're the only intelligent life. But at the same time,
but you raise another interesting question, though, Chris. Have you noticed that the less religious this nation has become, the more you're hearing about UFOs, and that there's almost a direct linkage between a loss of faith in God and a sudden belief in UFOs and global warming?
I think people are searching for answers. They want a deeper connection.
That's right. They're searching for answers, so they're inventing answers. They're hoping that there's an extraterrestrial answer out there because they no longer believe in God. I mean, there's a direct parallel between the loss of faith in God and the sudden belief in UFOs. So what if there are UFOs? What does that do for us? How does that change anything?
Well, I think that if we were somehow able to prove that there were UFOs or intelligent life, that would have radical implications for everyone on this planet, because at least we'd be able to appreciate how big the universe is and maybe how small we really are. But it would also...
Yeah, well, if there are UFOs and there are supernatural beings that are smarter and more powerful than us, I think it's their time to, like, come down and take control of the world and kind of put Chavez and Ahmadinejad and the others in their place. Wouldn't you say so? Because they're about to set off World War III, which nobody else in the universe, I would think, would want to happen.
Amen to that. We need
to... All right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let them come down and go to Venezuela and not bother me. Let him go to Venezuela and talk to that moron there in the red shirt who thinks he's Simon Bolivar. And let him go to Iran where he thinks he's the return of Adolf Hitler in a Muslim form. And let him talk to Ahmadinejad, you know, who wants to set off the tinderbox. Let him start over there. And then maybe we'll go to that to the next level with those guys. I, it's a big thing now with this whole thing. I mean, it can freak you out. You can believe anything. You get crazy now. Oh, there they are. There are the little guys. That's why you got to get a poodle. If you get a poodle or a small dog, you could stop. You can go crazy on your own in a dark room. You can believe anything. Oop, there they are. Get a poodle, that's all. Get a poodle in bed with you. You'll stop thinking like that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
A special story for those of you who live on Long Island is out of Newsday. Physician reuses dirty syringes for years, exposing hundreds of his patients to hepatitis. Bonus to the story, the so-called officials on Long Island and in the New York Medical Authority are keeping his identity secret so he can keep practicing medicine. You hear this one? And we know why, and it's because he was an immigrant from a third world country who has cooperated in the investigation. Few of his patients already have hepatitis. He reused dirty syringes. You know, every time I go in a doctor today, or even a medical lab for a test, I'm very leery of them. I even joke around. I say, is that needle new? Oh, no, they joke around. I don't trust any of this anymore, you know, none of it. I've become immensely cynical of the whole medical profession, the way it's run, to be frank with you. You know, the congressmen and senators don't go through this because they have their own medical system, have their own retirement system. They may as well live in another country, which they do. That other country is called Congress. And our country was never established to have a caste system. They have created a caste system for themselves where they're immune, buffered from the people, which is a monarchy in essence. It's like a monarchy we're dealing with here, which is why they come up with these loony ideas. Licenses for illegals. Wow, what a great idea, Elliot. You're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, and then you wonder why New York backfired on you. You know, you come up with any idea from these people. Bush is the same. Another one born with a silver spoon in his mouth doesn't have any contact with the real people, which is why he comes up with these ideas. WOR, New York City. Jeff, your idea is wanted. Quickly, please.
Yes, Michael, love your great show. I just have a fantasy. I know that these candidates aren't going to come on your show, and I know you're not going to run yourself, but boy, would I love to hear you moderate one of these endless debates that we have over and over again.
Tell you what we're going to do for you. I'll have the staff produce answers from Giuliani and McCain and Hillary and Obama to questions I raise, and we'll make believe it's a debate. Would that work for you?
Well, that would be good. Can I tell you one question that I would have that nobody's going to ask these candidates?
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I'd love to hear it another time. This is, I'll be back, Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is true that the day started out bad in the barbershop, and I walked out because both of the cutters were coughing, dry hacking cough. But if you look at the news, it gets worse. Top left, michaelsavage.com. Spitzer waves the white flag, dumps license plan for illegal immigrants. That's very bad news for Hillary Clinton, who has waffled on this issue. On the right side, Chavez to the Spanish king, apologize or risk business. This guy's out of control. He's a whack job, a socialist maniac, who is way overestimating his place in history and his powers. Next story, SF supervisors approve ID cards for residents, totally illegal, flies in the face of federal law, much worse even than driver's licenses for illegals, and the federal government, mainly Homeland Security, should arrest Tom Amiano and the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco for undermining Homeland Security. They should come in with handcuffs and federal marshals, and arrest the entire Board of Supervisors, and finally take them out, grinding their faces into the pavement, for once again, not only defying common sense, but the law itself. Lab chief from La Crosse case leaves job, but the Durham dirtbag walks freely. No charges, even though she falsely accused the men. To me, it's a miscarriage of justice. I believe the Durham dirtbag who started the entire case against the Duke lacrosse players should be put in prison for 20 years where she tried to put the men 20 years in the slammer. Left side below, michaelsavage.com. Google idiots say they will not censor racist anti-Semitic content, which is why they're rich. You understand that. Demagogues always get rich for a while. Rice, the worst secretary of hate in the history of America, is trying to get the Israelis to give up the entire Judea and Samaria regions to those who would kill them and lob rockets into their daughters' play schools. Condoleezza Rice needs to be retired. She's a clear and present danger to the survival, not of Israel per se, but of Western interests in general. Well, there are many other stories. You've heard them all. I mean, there's so many here. It's getting depressing for me to read any more of them, so I'll go to the callers. Marcus in Cincinnati on WKRC. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I wanted to let you know that I'm socially liberal, fiscally conservative, and I wanted to let you know that I feel like you're a real iconoclast. You're beholden to no man, and we really appreciate. There are a few socially liberal folks in the country who really appreciate what you do every night.
Well, I hope so. Some of my family members are socially liberal and fiscally conservative, but it doesn't mean I hate them.
No, absolutely not. I understand that. I thought it was important to let you know. You talk to a lot of people who are extremely angry at you on the show, and I don't feel like it's fair.
Well, they're the extremists, like in the Council on American-Islamic Relations. They're trying to destroy my show because they claim to be into religious freedom, or groups like Media Matters, which is a fascist front group, which was created in part by Hillary Clinton. I can't believe you'd want to line yourself up with them. They're not social liberals. I don't think you would agree with that. I mean, I don't think you'd agree that they're socially liberal groups.
No, I absolutely don't. I don't trust Hillary Clinton as far as I can throw
her. Well, Media Matters was created by Hillary Clinton, and they're after Michael Savage, they're after Bill O'Reilly, they're after anybody that doesn't toe the Hillary left-wing party line. Thank you. Are you originally from Ireland?
Yes.
That's why you like iconoclasts.
So, what's that?
That's why you like iconoclasts like me.
I might be part of it, yeah.
Yep. Well, I like the Irish people very much. I always have. I've always gotten along with the Irish. And I never even ask them their politics. I'm sure many of them are very liberal. But I generally like their, I don't know what it is about their spirit. I just like it. Who knows? What do I know? Vernon, KNEW, San Francisco. KNEW, my local affiliate, my wonderful affiliate here in the heart of liberal pollution land. Vernon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How are you? You remember me? I did your reading about 10 years ago. I talked.
Yes, I do. You're a local palm reader.
Yep. I've been listening ever since. I got another prediction for you.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute now. Does it have to do with the fact that the very palm you read now, the thumb doesn't work?
Well, that may have inspired me to call you.
So what's your prediction?
My prediction is that you're going to form eventually a national organization, and it's going to have far-reaching effects. You're going to still do your radio show because that's your medium, but you're going to form a major organization. You're going to coordinate it, and there's going to be different key players that are going to have great ramifications throughout society.
You're unbelievable. You know, Vernon, actually you are psychic because this Sunday – I'm having a small dinner for 15 very important people, and I'm going to create a conservative movement that doesn't exist in this country. I can't believe that you certainly didn't hear of this because it's a very, very private group of people.
To be honest with you, I had a dream about it about 3-4 days ago. And the fact that you mentioned your thumb, I just said, I got to call Michael and tell him what my dream was.
I can't believe this, Vernon. I do remember you. So what about me personally? How long am I going to live?
You're going to be with us a while, Michael. God willing.
Hey, Vernon, will you do me a favor, Vernon? Would you email, stay on the line, Vernon, and I want you to stay on the line. Guys, get Vernon's email address. I absolutely have to be in touch with him. I can't believe it. Because Sunday evening, I'm having a group of 15 people, and these are very important people in San Francisco, who are fed up with the one party system. They are fed up with the controlled press. They are fed up with the anti-family values. They are fed up with the fascism of the left in the city. They're fed up with the drugged up leadership of the city. And I call this little dinner of these 15 important people. And I'm going to this little meeting. I'm going to try and set up a method to start a local and national movement to take the country back from the left-wing power-mad lunatics locally and from the globalists nationally. That's right. Now, it may be a long road, but remember, you know, great oaks from little acorns and all of that go. I mean, I'm willing to start from ground zero. I'm willing to do that, and that's what we're going to do. I can't believe I'll report on it on Monday. Up next, we have Dean Barnett on Hillary and illegals and what the Spitzer reversal is going to do to her campaign. I think you can pretty much predict that her campaign is sputtering out. I wouldn't say it's over. Don't get me wrong. She's quite resilient. She has a powerful machine. She owns the left-wing press. But the fact of the matter is she changed position sufficient. And now with the planting the questions in the audience with the college kids, it's not looking good for Hillary at all. The problem is, who else is there? I'll be right back. Driver's licenses for illegal aliens. I know, you know, we all know it was a horrible, incomprehensible, deadly idea. We've asked Dean Barnett to come talk about what this will do to Hillary and her campaign, believe me, and ultimately the presidential election. Mr. Barnett has written an article for the Weekly Standard entitled Hillary Stumbles on Immigration. Hello, Mr. Barnett.
Michael, it's great to talk to you. Great to be here.
Well, basically, how did Hillary screw up on illegal immigration?
Well, what was amazing about her mess up on illegal immigration is that she was completely unprepared for the question regarding Elliot Spitzer's plan to grant illegal immigrants driver's licenses. That's an idea that appalls the vast majority of the country, and she wasn't prepared for it. And as a consequence, she tried to straddle the issue, saying, I'm not for it, I'm not against it, it may be a good idea, it's all George Bush's fault, where it was just she looked confused, she looked indecisive, and she also looked extremely wobbly on illegal immigration, which is an issue, by the way, that Democrats are as animated about and in agreement with as Republicans are.
So today, Elliot Spitzer, the governor of New York, comes out and he's basically said he's not going through with his ID plan for illegals. In light of that, doesn't this affect Hillary Clinton's campaign?
You know, the damage to her campaign has been done. And how serious the wound is, you know, we'll just have to see how it's played out. That Elliot Spitzer coming out today and saying, you know, I'm backing off of this idea that, you know, before he came up with this idea, his approval ratings were plus 20%. Now they're minus 20%. So he knocked himself down 40%, you know, really calling into question how much of a political genius he is. the fact that Hillary was so clueless on this issue really calls into question how much of a political genius she is.
We keep hearing about the inevitability of Hillary Clinton winning the nomination, then, of course, the presidency. Doesn't this dent that possibility?
Oh, it definitely does. That, you know, outside the most far-left people on the left, the far most liberal people on the left, illegal immigration is an issue that really animates, you know, really everyone in America. Now, the Democrats in Congress and a handful of Republicans, you know, see no problem with amnesty and see no problem with amnesty without securing the borders. But even the people who vote in Democratic primaries think that's ridiculous. And so it really does harm her. It's really a harmful mistake. And it's something that she's going to be having to live with the rest of the campaign. This is her, I voted for the $87 billion before I voted against it. That her opponents, Obama and Edwards, are going to be throwing this in her face constantly from now until February 5th.
Why is it that the left tries so hard to blame the very existence of the issue of illegal immigration on talk radio? Can you explain how they try to do that and what the consequences are?
Well, the left doesn't understand talk radio. You know, they don't understand that, you know, talk radio gives voice to a lot of outrage that's out there and a lot of feelings that are out there. But talk radio doesn't create those feelings. The reason they listen to you, Michael, is because you give voice to the anger, frustration, and all the good feelings, too, that people have out there. That's why they listen to your show. You don't foment those feelings. People tune into you because you reflect the feelings that they're already having. And that's something that people like Hillary Clinton just can't understand, that they're just so badly out of touch with the rest of the country, except for the most liberal people in the country, but even out of touch with most of the members in their own party. And it's not talk radio's fault. Talk radio isn't generating these feelings. Talk radio just reflects these feelings.
Now, how does the public respond to this issue in elections? What's the track record there?
We had an open congressional seat in Massachusetts. You know, in a district that John Kerry carried by 17%, the Republican came within 5 points of winning it. And he was a classic squishy Massachusetts Republican, you know, talking about, oh, we got to heal the partisan divide and I'm not a Bush Republican and all that kind of stuff. The only thing he was a hardline Republican on was on immigration, where he was really quite adamant that he wasn't going to allow amnesty and that he was going to secure the border and that he was going to secure the interior. And he came within 5 points of winning. That he did 12 points better than John Kerry did. And Al Gore did better than John Kerry, by the way. John Kerry didn't do particularly great in Massachusetts because we know him best here and we don't like him.
Are the liberals finally starting to wake up to the illegal alien crisis, or aren't they?
Oh, no, definitely not. That the liberals are not waking up to the illegal alien crisis because the people who call the shots in the Democratic Party, you know, still want to grant the amnesty because, you know, they think that the bulk of the people they grant amnesty to will be Democratic voters. And that's where their bread is buttered. That's what this has always been all about from their point of view. You know, from John McCain's point of view and John Kyle's point of view, I don't know what they were thinking. But I do know that's what the Democrats were thinking, is they grant amnesty to 12 million, 16 million people, and those are going to be 12 million, 16 million new Democratic voters. So that's their end game. That's why they're so serious about this.
Okay, so obviously Hillary has really wrecked her campaign on this. She's gone aground on this. What's been the Democrats' immediate response?
The Democrats' response to Hillary's mistake has actually been pretty interesting, that they've let the media take shots at her, but the candidates really haven't. That, you know, John Edwards hasn't said really anything about it. Barack Obama really hasn't said anything about it. You know, even the guys lower down the tier, like, you know, Kucinich and Chris Godd and Joe Biden have kind of let it lie. They've let the media do their dirty work for them. But, you know, the candidates don't want to alienate the far left wing of the base. So they're being quiet about it, too.
Well, we keep hearing the reports of the death of the Republican Party, how they're splintered, how social conservatives are thinking of bolting from the party. Are we perhaps seeing something similar happening in the Democrat Party?
I don't think we're seeing the death of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is very united against Iraq and against George W. Bush, and that's going to see them through another cycle. There's no question about that. But for what it's worth, I also don't think we're seeing the death of the Republican Party. That I think the Republican Party will come together. That I don't think anybody who calls themselves a Republican wants to see Hillary Clinton in the White House.
Eventually, how do you think this is going to turn out? I mean, there are large numbers of Democratic voters of or people who normally vote Democratic who are actually very much opposed to illegal immigration. How are they going to take this into account? Or do they even have to?
Yeah, I think illegal immigration is actually going to be a huge issue in the 2008 campaign. And it's really the biggest thing and the one signature thing that the Republican candidate is going to have working for him. That, you know, we're coming off a president who is not particularly popular right now. But illegal immigration is an issue where all the candidates have put themselves on the right spot of it, all those leading Republican candidates. And all the Democratic candidates are wrong on it. You know, and by wrong, I mean they're not where 80% of the American public is. And it's also an issue that the public is very passionate about. That you talk to any of the candidates, any of their aides, and you say, ask them what questions they get most, what issues they hear raised most in Iowa. You know, and Iowa's not a border state. They will tell you immigration. And that's both parties. And the Republicans are on the right side of it, and the Democrats are on the wrong side of it. So that's something that it's something that could be very serious and really tilt the election in 2008 to the Republican candidate.
Do you think that the conservatives are doing enough to adequately respond to the Tom Credos of the Republican Party? Are the conservatives doing enough to get fuel out of this issue? Are they responding to their own base sufficiently? If I don't think so, but what do you think?
I think, you know, when you talk about Tom Tancredo, that there's some stuff that he says that's good. As Republicans, you know, we always want to be optimistic, that we always want to have the spirit of Ronald Reagan. And, you know, Tancredo, I don't think necessarily characterizes that. That I do think that as Republicans, that, you know, Tancredo's all the way out there, you know, to the people who are most animated and most angry about illegal immigration, that we're not going to get a nominee who's coming from the exact same spot as Tom Tancredo was. But I will tell you something. You may see Duncan Hunter on the ticket, and you'll almost most likely see Duncan Hunter playing a role in a Republican administration. So, you know, it's the people who are most animated about this issue won't get everything they want, but they're going to get a lot more of what they want with the Republican candidate than with the Democrat.
Well, thanks for coming to talk to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks very much for having me on.
Dean Barnett.
Savage.
We don't like to bombard people with news about gas prices. We know they're high, it gets depressing, but the current state of affairs doesn't provide for a favorable future for the American dollar. With the dollar losing ground fast to the euro and the Canadian loonie, we need to look at the causes. We have Jerome Corsi on the line to help us gain some perspective.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show. It's a great honor to be with you.
So what's the situation with foreign oil? We've seen all the news, the high prices at the pumps. What effect is this having on the country as a whole?
Oil has just gone to such a price, it closed last Friday at $96 a barrel, which means that we've reached a threshold of paying $1 billion a day for foreign oil. We've never been at that level before. When George Bush took office, just to get a comparison, in January 2001, oil was at $24 a barrel. There's been a remarkable increase and run-up in oil, and a huge outflow of dollars to foreign nations because we're 60% dependent on foreign oil. 60% of the oil we use every day, the 20 million barrels we consume every day, some 12 million barrels come from foreigners. And with these spikes in prices, we are just shoveling dollars out of the United States, deepening our balance of payments deficits, and putting tremendous stress on the dollar. The dollar is dropping in world markets. This is one of the key effects. The dollar closed on Friday down to 75 on the dollar index. That's probably one of the lowest points historically the dollar's ever hit on that index. And it's trading to $1.47 for a euro. When George Bush took office, it was about 97 cents for a euro. And now even the Canadian dollar is stronger than the U.S. dollar. This is a tremendous strain on the dollar, and it's going to be felt by every consumer. You're going to start seeing now gasoline creep up. It's going to be over $4 a gallon. I think gasoline is headed some point of this winter towards $5 a gallon. It's already hit that price in some locations in California. The this whole not producing our own oil is a disgrace. I've been arguing now since I wrote Black Gold Stranglehold, which I wrote in 2005, to produce our own oil. We're getting oil right now. Our three major suppliers are Canada, Mexico, and Venezuela, right around us. And we've got much of the same resources. From Canada, we're getting oil out of Alberta with the oil shales. We've got the oil sands, the oil tars. We've got the same resource in the oil shale in the Rocky Mountains. And at $96 a barrel, we can be economically developing that shale oil into petroleum products, including gasoline. Mexico is getting their oil in the Gulf of Mexico. And Chevron, just in the end of 2006, discovered the Jack Field off of Louisiana. That one field is going to increase U.S. reserves by about 50%. We need to look for deep oil under the continental shelf. It's abundant for the United States, and if Mexico can find it, we can find it too. It's the same with Venezuela. Brazil has just found a huge offshore well that's going to increase Brazil's reserves, some 5 to 8 billion barrels, deep sea oil, deep well drilling. And right now, Brazil, with that one find off of the coast in the Atlantic off of Brazil, Brazil is now second to Venezuela. But what we're seeing is that with oil windfalls getting to over $90 a barrel, countries like Iran, and Iran exports about 2 million barrels of oil a day, they're getting $180 million a day now in oil revenue, when, you know, that's dramatically over when oil was $24 a barrel when George Bush took office. And Iran is using this oil windfall profits to fund terrorism, to support Hezbollah in Lebanon, to support Hamas in the Gaza, to send insurgents into Iraq to destabilize Iraq and threaten our troops. These windfall profits are fueling terrorism with countries like Iraq. And Saudi Arabia, which exports 10 million barrels a day, that's $900 million a day to Saudi Arabia in oil revenue. Just about $1 billion a day to Saudi Arabia. Huge windfall profits for Saudi Arabia with these spikes in oil. And again, countries like Saudi Arabia or Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, are amassing huge dollar holdings, which become sovereign funds, and they're looking to reinvest them back in the United States. I mean, we're going to end up, Dubai's already offered to, it has a bid to buy 20% of NASDAQ, one of our two major stock exchanges. We're going to be under pressure here very quickly to have foreigners, these oil-producing companies, come back in and buy up a lot of the United States with our own money. As such, we'll lose a lot of control of our corporate structures. We'll have many more foreign interests. We'll be moving toward becoming an international country with a lot of our corporations and other assets owned by foreign nations with their oil windfall profits.
Well, Jerry, why is it that we're still so dependent on the oil of our enemies?
I think for a large part, we have been letting the environmentalists dictate our oil strategy. And then the oil companies have worked hand-in-hand with the environmentalists to limit drilling. You know, if the oil companies can convince us all that oil is fossil fuel, and I've thought for, you know, since I was a child that that's nonsense, and increasingly there's excellent evidence that hydrogen and carbon combine all through our solar system without the help of any dying dinosaurs. We're finding deep, abundant oil, you know, at 3 miles or below the surface of the Earth, where there never were any dinosaurs or any other living material that could make the oil. I remind people that it's not the case that all the dinosaurs herded in Saudi Arabia and died in a big heap. That's not why we have oil in Saudi Arabia. The bedrock is deeply fractured under Saudi Arabia, and that's where the oil seeps from the mantle of the Earth, where it's manufactured, into the oil fields in Saudi Arabia. But the oil companies can convince us that oil is fossil fuel and we've hit peak oil and we're running out. What a great scheme to charge more. And the oil companies are sitting on historically high reserves. They made $100 billion last year. They want to sell the reserves at the highest price they can get. And I think we should take away the tax incentives from the oil companies unless they produce more refineries or produce more supply. one way or the other. We haven't built a new refinery in the United States for 30 years. And again, it's the stranglehold between the environmentalists that we're allowing to dictate our oil policy and the oil companies, which are happy to restrict supply so they can charge more for the abundant reserves they have.
Well, exporters such as the Saudis and Chavez and Venezuela are exploiting us. What do our leaders need to do to change the situation?
Venezuela is a good example. I mean, you've got Chavez, who is completely an enemy of the United States, heading Venezuela. And he's working with our enemies. He's also working with Iran, another oil-producing company getting windfalls. He has close ties with Fidel Castro. He's fomenting insurrections, leftist revolutions all through South America. And we're fueling Chavez with our oil windfall profits to him. He's our third biggest supplier of oil right now to the United States. You know, we are increasingly getting over 1 million barrels of oil a day from Chavez. This type of dependence on dictators such as Chavez producing oil and us buying that oil, we should do everything we can to use the oil we've got. We've got abundant oil offshore. We've got abundant oil in Alaska. This whole idea of ANWR is about the size of a postage stamp on a football field. The whole Alaska might be filled with oil, and we just haven't explored it. Even the Department of Energy is now saying in a deep trek project that there's abundant natural gas 3 miles below the surface of the continental United States. Let's go get it. Why should we save these oil resources when they are abundantly available for us? We could go from being 60% dependent on foreign oil. Let's set a reasonable target. Let's get to 50% dependence on foreign oil. Let's work it down from there to where we're not shoveling dollars out the window to these foreign nations, weakening our balance of payments, weakening the dollar, and at the same time going into debt for the oil we're buying to consume every day.
If we continue to allow the environmentalists to restrict us, if we continue to allow the enemies of America to exploit us because they've got us bent over an oil barrel, what are the consequences for America going to be if we do nothing?
America cannot sustain for any longer this dependence on foreign oil. If we continue to move towards 70% dependence on foreign oil, we're allowing, you know, countries like Venezuela, countries like Iran, who are not our friends, they're clearly our enemies, to manipulate oil prices to their benefit and to bring us to our knees. I mean, our economy is oil dependent, but we've got abundant oil. We're not running out. The Energy Information Administration says there's 1.3 trillion barrels of oil in proven reserves. That's more than ever in human history, despite the fact that oil consumption's doubled since 1970 worldwide. There's plenty of oil around. Let's get the oil executives in front of Congress again. Last time I saw these oil executives testify, it didn't look like any of them had missed a meal in 25 years or gotten out of their limousines to pump any gasoline from the pump. When it's costing Americans, you know, $50 or $60 or $75 to fill their gas tanks, I think we have a right to demand these oil companies build new refineries, come off of their reserves, and get more supply into the market. Every year, we're just hearing, oh, it's the refinery difficulties that cause these spikes in prices. American people got to wake up and realize that we're being bilked of these billions by oil companies who are happy to convince us they're running out of oil when they're sitting on historically reserves larger than they ever had. We've got to get through this idea that we're at peak oil. I've been hearing that we were going to run out of oil since I was a child, and we're still today nowhere near running out of oil. We're awash in oil worldwide. It's abundant, and we've got to demand that the oil companies increase supply at reasonable prices. We're one gunshot away in the Middle East, in tinderbox situations now with Iran pushing to nuclear weapons, with Pakistan on the verge of chaos, with Musharraf under, you know, emergency martial law in the country because he doesn't want to face an election. One gunshot away in the Middle East from oil spiking again to $120 a barrel. And these, when I wrote Black Gold Stranglehold in 2005, only 2 years ago, then oil was at $44 a barrel. I predicted oil was going to be at close to $100 a barrel, and everyone thought that was crazy. It could never happen. Well, now I'm seeing oil. We're one gunshot away in the Middle East from oil being $120 a barrel. And at that point, our balance of payments strain for buying foreign oil is going to push the dollar into such a weakness that the dollar could well collapse.
What a grim situation.
It's a grim situation, but, you know, we have allowed ourselves to get in this situation. And President Bush needs to quit giving State of the Union speeches when he talks about switchgrass and ethanol being the solutions. We need a solution that's oil-dependent. We've got an oil-based economy. We've got abundant oil in the world. What are we saving it for? Besides the fact that we've doubled consumption since the 1970s, and we still have historically more oil in proven reserves than ever before. Michael, it's a great pleasure to talk with you. I'm delighted to be on your show anytime you ask.
Jerome Corsi, thank you once again.
Savage.
Wow, wow, it gets crazier by the minute. I mean, I was already agitated. Now I'm hearing that the dollar could collapse. The oil could go through the roof. What are you going to do here? I mean, you know, you listen to that interview, which I did earlier today, and you start to say maybe the critics of Bush in the beginning who said it was a war for oil were right. But it wasn't a war for oil. They had it half right. It was a war to lock up oil and keep prices arbitrarily high. I mean, that's a theory, isn't it? It's worth discussing. Or, I mean, you can want to get let your mind get carried away. What was the war about? Partially, what, to free the Shia, who then stabbed us in the back? They thanked us by stabbing us in the back and lined up with their friends from Iran? Or were we Hessians? Is this a Hessian army that was enlisted for the aid of Saudi Arabia, a Sunni nation, to make sure that the oil didn't fall in the hands of the Iranians, a Shia nation? I mean, where does this begin and end? All I know is that $100 a barrel oil is unsustainable economically. And something has to give. We could go on to a Manhattan Project level of drilling for oil, throw away all environmental curbs and start drilling in Anwar province, start drilling offshore, and call it a day. And, you know, let them sue and let the ACLU scream and let Barbara Boxer get up on her gold lame heels and scream about the environment while jumping off on a private jet to go to Washington. Let them do it. Just call it a national emergency and start drilling. And bring it down to 50%, 40%. And I have a great plan. No drilling at all. Tell Mexico we have 20 million illegal aliens here. They're costing us $15 to $20 billion a year, at least. At least. You don't have the money? Fine. You have a resource we need called oil. We want 20 million barrels a day for free. That pays for the incarceration, hospitalization, education, and medication of your citizens who are in our country. Let's, you know, balance the scales. I mean, there are things that a rational president could and would do. If we had an FDR, I don't care if Democrat or Republican, you get a national emergency, you put aside politics, and you act. I don't see that happening. All we have are partisan blowhards on both sides, sticking to the party platform and the party line. And I say put the nation above the party. I don't hear that from either of the parties. Do you? All I hear is party, 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 and I'm sick of them partying. I'm sick of them partying already. Republican Party with the balloons and a Democrat Party with the balloons. Put the nation above the party. Put politics aside. We have an emergency. We need a Manhattan Project on the level of oil. And either you start drilling or you start demanding that Mexico pipe it into us. That's all. Because I'll tell you what's going to happen otherwise. This country's not going to suddenly roll over and die and be beholden to Saudi Arabia or China or Iran. It will not happen. There's going to be something that's going to break here, and we're going to have a legitimate takeover of this government somewhere, somehow, some way, I don't know how, and we'll wind up becoming like we were in the 19th century. We'll have gunboat diplomacy. We'll go seize the oil. If need be, we'll seize the oil fields of Venezuela, or we'll seize the oil fields of Mexico. Mark my words, it could happen. You say it's impossible? You're wrong. You're wrong. You get rid of these oil men who are running the country, and you put in somebody who's really an American patriot. And you're going to shock you. It could be a Democrat who might do that, who is not beholden to the oil industry. He's not going to let this country become beholden to the Arab terrorist, nor to the Chinese military. We could see an invasion of Venezuela and a seizing of the oil fields, or we could see an invasion of Mexico and seizing of some of the oil fields. It could happen. Don't say it's impossible. It could happen. Even if they started drilling in Anwar right now, we're 5 years away. And we're doing nothing. We're not drilling. We're not building nuclear power plants. We're sitting in doing nothing. Why? Because the oil companies have never had it so good. And, of course, they probably fund the environmental groups, as Corsi said, to make sure that we don't drill and that we don't build any refineries. I don't doubt it. That's all. But you don't want to talk about it. I understand. Too complicated late in the day. Go have your palm read. You'll feel better. Go do yoga. Go ahead. Get the spandex and do yoga. Go Om. See if Om is going to help you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. The website's michaelsavage.com. Nothing but depressing news today. Horrible. Horrible. It started out bad in the barbershop, and it got worse. But a minute it got worse. Tonight I'm supposed to go to a dinner my friend invited me to at the Exploratorium's having a fundraiser. It's a science group. I'll probably go. I got to have some optimism. I can't take it anymore. Here's a story just came out minutes ago. You ready for this? Another piece of good news. Feds accused scholar of terror activity. The federal government said it denied a visa for a well-known South African scholar, Adam Habib, by the way, because he engaged in a terrorist activity. Take a guess who sued the government. ACLU. ACLU fights the government and says, let the terrorist in. Now, again, the day will come when the leadership of the ACLU will be visited by U.S. Marshals. See, I have a dream. I have a dream that one day we will shake the liberal bug, the socialist suicide liberal bug off our back. And I don't care, Democrat or Republican, I have a dream that a legitimate government that has the interest of the American people at heart, not their party, will send U.S. Marshals into the ACLU headquarters. They will seize files. They will handcuff the leadership of the ACLU. They'll put them into squad cars. They will find out there's a linkage to petrodollars. There's a linkage to terrorists themselves. And this country will be on the road to freedom. Right now, we have a fifth branch of government. It is called the ACLU. They are an unelected group of anti-Americans. We cannot survive unless they are stopped. This is the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.